Hello, everyone. I'm Robbie Dorman, and this is the Serial Fanaticist, a podcast for fans of everything. Welcome. Helen Hunter is back today to talk about Forbidden Door, the All Elite Wrestling and New Japan Pro Wrestling crossover pay-per-view. We run down the card, talk about our highs and lows, with reports from Helen, who is live at the show. A brief note before we get to the conversation, this podcast, as you can tell, is on the back burner. I'm not abandoning it completely, but I really don't have the time or energy to record a steady slate of episodes anymore. It's not going away completely, probably never will, but I'm only planning on using it sporadically from here on out. Next episode might be in a week or might be in 5 months again. I don't know. On to the show. Hello, everyone. I'm here with Helen Hunter. Helen, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm caffeinated.
Man, jealous. I get like two cups of coffee a day now because I am once again pregnant. Seems to be a theme on this show.
I looked at when we last talked. It was literally 1 year ago. Almost like it was like it's we're 8 days away from a year.
Oh, really?
Precisely.
I would have thought it was longer than that, but here we are.
Helen is our New Japan Pro Wrestling correspondent.
Yes. Fresh back from Chicago, which was our going to see Forbidden Door. Man, we spent a irresponsible amount of money on getting out there and getting the tickets. But it was our kind of last hurrah before I get too pregnant to do stuff and before we have three fucking kids. So it was totally worth it. We had a great time.
I watched on pay-per-view. The crowd was great. Very loud. Was it as loud as it seemed?
Yes. Yes, and like very good energy. And I'm excited to talk about our different experiences here because there's a lot of stuff that happened in like live that was probably very different from your experience watching it on TV.
Oh, almost certainly. Live experience changes everything.
So did you watch the pre-show?
Yes, I watched the pre-show. I did.
Okay. I was very impressed by all four matches. Should we just jump right into it?
We're just gonna run down the card, give our general thoughts. There's room for tangents, whatever. We're not professionals. No one's paying us for this. I would say just up front that it was I think it's not unfair to call it a mediocre build for the pay-per-view. It felt a little rushed at times, and then slow at other places, and there was so many injuries from both sides, plus travel problems and all kinds of mayhem.
To the point people were speculating, is this indeed a Forbidden Door?
Is it a cursed show? Right. How dare you call it a Forbidden Door? But the show delivered. We'll do a little wrap up at the end. We'll talk about our overall thoughts, I think. But first match was
Goto and Yoshihashi.
Yeah, Goto Yoshihashi versus The Factory, Heat Machine, QT Marshall.
Okay, so let me preface this by saying because of the convergence of the NBA playoffs and Best of the Super Juniors, I am I've not kept up with AEW super well in the past couple months. So I'm just getting out ahead of myself here. And I had to kind of look up some of these folks. But when Goto and Yoshihashi came out, there was a huge pop. There were people cheering specifically for Yoshihashi, which kind of warmed my heart.
The Hosh.
Yeah, right? And I was excited to see that he got his big stick through security.
It's very important. Team stick.
Yeah, right?
that's what we were calling them on the Discord. They were team stick.
And there was immediate booing for QT Marshall. I mean, the whole crowd was so amped. And I got to say, before they even started the show, Tony Khan came out and we were speculating, is he on Adderall or just Coke? Not sure.
No, I mean, well, Tony is, I've been to Dynamite multiple Dynamite tapings and recordings, Rampage, whatever. Every time they've been in Austin, I've gone. And Tony has always come out and is always just amped. He's always excited, and it's very cute because he is like this little man who just like wants to yell and scream about how happy he is about wrestling.
Oh my God. And it's like, cute is the correct word. He reminded me of like an anime character when he was kind of getting people hyped for the show. He was talking about the main event with John Moxley and his little knees like bent towards each other. I mean, he looked like just like a little anime girl. It was so great.
People throw around the Coke stuff all the time, but I mean, I don't think it's Coke. I think it really is just Adderall and just caffeine. I would believe that he is on like some sort of Adderall or some ADHD medication. I buy that. I don't think that man is too busy. I don't think he's doing hard drugs.
I think
he would be spinning out by this point. He has so many jobs.
So he came out and he teased the Bulls. He was like, you know, because the Bulls is where they play at the United Center.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was like, oh, I'm really excited to welcome a special guest. Is he here? Like, you know, this is a place where the Michael Jordan played and Scottie Pippen. And I could feel the crowd being like, oh my God, holy shit, did he get Michael Jordan to show up? But he was actually just trying to get -1 out. He didn't end up showing up until the end of the show because I don't think he was like ready or whatever. But anyway, let's get back to Goto and Yoshihashi.
It was a good match. It was a solid match. Nothing spectacular. It definitely is. This match exists to get Goto and Yoshihashi on the card. Two veterans who've done lots and lots of work for New Japan. Worked for New Japan back in the doldrums before Tanahashi and Okada lifted them up to where they are. And it's clear, like, we want to reward these guys for their years of service. And even if it's not a big match, it's on the card. It's in front of this crowd.
Everyone's very excited to see them, for sure.
And they seem pumped. And honestly, they haven't heard crowd cheers for years at this point. Like, so you can clearly see them amped.
Yeah. And Yoshihashi was like absolutely smiling when the Yoshihashi chant started. Really good stuff. I wore my Goto shirt when I was flying with the babies to Colorado, where we actually left them with their grandparents and then went to Chicago. But my Goto shirt I wear when I'm trying to channel like some really strong dad energy, just like I can handle this. I think just that they brought a really good energy to the first match of the show. And it was a really good start.
Yeah. G in Forbidden Door stands for Goto.
Yeah, that's right. That's very right.
They win. They beat QT Marshall and Aaron Solo. Not surprising because those dudes basically just eat pins for a living. QT Marshall is, I will say this, the one thing I will say about QT Marshall, I used to be a hater, but in this role, he's perfect. Everyone hates QT Marshall because he's very hateable. And he fulfills that role very well.
And an important role it is.
Yeah, just to put over guys, you know, in not a lot of, there's no build to this match. It is literally an exhibition match, but he just being a big dummy, you know, look at his ugly, stupid face that you want to punch. He looks like, you know, Kevin James, like, hey, I hate you, QT Marshall. No reason. Second match on the pre-show, Lance Archer versus Nick Caveman Accountant Comerado.
Big boy match.
Yep. Big. This is maybe my least. This match is fine. It's not like it was bad or anything, but this feels like a match that could have been on AEW Dark.
I know. I'm kind of like reaching to remember what happened.
I mean, Lance Archer got to do his cool spots. You know, he walked. He did the walk on the rope and then do the moonsault off of it. You know, he did the stuff he does. Nick Romanorato got to be like a big strong boy a couple times, but that's it. That's the match. Yeah. It's fine.
Well, I just wanted to see Lance Archer because he was such a great, like, he played such a good role in New Japan when he was there as just like the big, like, truly huge, scary dude.
Yeah, and now he's going to be in the G1, and it's pretty clear that this is, again, this match exists because Lance, they wanted Lance on the card to remind, probably to remind more so than AEW viewers, to remind New Japan viewers, hey, he's going to be in the G1. Remember Lance? You remember Lance. He was there not too long ago. He's going to be in the G1.
Okay, the next match is one of my favorite matches of the night.
It was really good. Very good match.
So we got Swerve Strickland, who is a somewhat local guy to the Pacific, well, I mean, local to the Pacific Northwest. I think he's from Tacoma, which is lovingly called the asshole of Washington. but when we first started going to indie shows here, it was before Swerve got picked up by WWE. So always excited to like kind of have him back on the radar. His whole thing with Keith Lee is so great. You know, they're playing like the Kobe and Shaq dynamic of the like kind of thoughtful, like playing the long game Keith Lee, and then the like kind of overexcited, a little arrogant Swerve. And then they were fighting El Desperado and Yoshinobu Kanemaru. And there was, in our view, down on the floor, the biggest Kanemaru stan I've ever seen, which is like just, you love to see it. She had a sign that was like, I didn't come for Okada, I came for Kanemaru.
That's
and was like that's, on her feet the whole time.
That's very cute.
Yeah.
You gotta love the drunkle.
Gotta love the drunkle.
The drunkle.
And he pulled out that move, the whole, you know, take a swig of your yep. Centauri and blow it in the face of
cheater whiskey.
Yeah.
This is a fun match, and like this was my prediction before this match happened, which did not occur. It seems like such a clear mismatch because you have Keith Lee, who is a massive, gigantic man, and Swerve, mm-hmm. who is all accounts also not a small guy, pretty big, and then you have Despy and Kanemaru, who I love them. I love Despy in particular, but they weigh 150 yeah, pounds, dripping wet. Like, and I'm like, Keith Lee is literally double Despy's size. And this is, I'm supposed to take, like, is this just, they're not, and I'm like, New Japan's not going to let anyone get squashed except for the young boys. Mm-hmm. So what is this? Is this, and my big conspiracy brain went, oh, because they've been teasing Keith and Swerve breaking up for a while. Swerve, you know, there was a Rumble match a couple, I don't know, weeks ago, and Swerve took Keith out of the match from behind. And mm-hmm. they've been teasing unrest, and they're still teasing it, but AEW takes their time on this stuff. So I was expecting, okay, they'll give Suzuki-Goon the win because Swerve is going to turn on Keith Lee. And this will be the...
That's kind of what we thought, too.
And then it didn't happen. It was still a really good match, and it was really fun watching the two juniors basically like pull out a bunch of tricks to try and stick with the super heavyweight, especially in Keith Lee.
Yeah, I think the size difference here really set up Despy and Kanemaru to do some of their most fun, like flippy, jumpy things.
Yeah, I mean it's creative. It's a lot of fun, and again. I think you will see this basically in every single match on this card. Every match is different from the other matches. There's mm-hmm. no matches that were similar to each other. They all had little different things here and there that changed the dynamics. This match was this David and Goliath type thing where you have the small heels trying to deal with these massive dudes and how can they try and overcome the odds.
Mm-hmm.
And really, some really good spots, really good match, and Swerve in Our Glory takes the win, which not a surprise, but it felt a lot closer than I thought it was going to be.
I agree. Yeah.
And I'm on team. This was also in the Wrestle Discord. Our talk was like, well, what happened? We were like, I don't want them. Some people are like, I don't want them to split up. You know, I want Swerve and Regular to stay around because they're a lot of fun together and they work really well as a tag. But ultimately, I am on team happy Keith Lee. I want Keith Lee to be happy, and whatever form that takes, that's all I want. And Swerve is great, and Swerve can be a face, he can be a heel, he can work in between, he can do anything. I have no idea. I still have no idea why on earth WWE released him when he's clearly a superstar. It makes no sense. Both of them.
Constantly. Like, WWE just makes decisions that I don't understand on a regular basis. Like, the whole thing with the attorney that had there was allegations of misconduct.
We do not have time to talk. That's an hour. That is an hour. That's a podcast all by itself. Last match of the pre-show is they haven't taken this name. I have no idea why they haven't yet, but the Ass Claimed versus the LA Dojo, effectively.
Okay, I wore my LA Dojo shirt to the show because they are my boys, and I was very excited about this. Gun Club and the Acclaimed are so great together.
They're like scissor me, daddy ass. How can you not like that?
It kind of makes me cringe every time, but I love it.
I mean, mission accomplished then. If you hate it, that's perfect.
So it was very exciting to see Yuya, who was a pretty new young lion in Japan when we, like, pretty quickly after we started watching New Japan in, like, 2018. And he has gone from looking like a skinny Bruce Lee to just like very like a big thick boy. I was a little disappointed. Now, I understand why this didn't happen, because they want to have some cohesion to their costumes. But Alex Coughlin recently debuted his like graduation look, like his new character, the android. And if you haven't seen this, you ought to look it up. He's got like a robot mask and like a breastplate that has these tubes that come around. It's like the most ridiculous looking costume. And he's spent the last several years with this mustache and fucking so jacked. I mean, he looks like an old timey, like vaudeville strongman. And so I was thinking he was going to kind of go like play off of that vibe, but no, this is a total 180. And I just love imagining how he, pitched this idea to Shibata and like how that whole process went, but he didn't come out in that costume. They all came out in their black, LA Dojo Young Lion trunks.
Yeah.
And so it was Yuya, Alex Coughlin, the DKC, who is just like a good karate boy, and Kevin Knight, who is kind of on the newer side, but is also a really fun guy to watch.
And then this is a match also exists literally to give all those LA Dojo guys a match. That's all this is, just so they're on the card. And then you get, you know, you have, yeah, Max Caster gets to rap, you know, and then we also get, which I was a little surprised by, we got the Ass Boys official theme got finally debuted on, if you follow Danhausen on social media, this song has been out there for a while, that he got 2 Minutes to Midnight to compose alongside guys from God's Hate, which is Brody King's band, and... Ah. This has been around for a long time, and I think everyone always thought this existed prior to Danhausen being signed by AEW, and everyone just thought this was just like, it's a fun Easter egg, you know, it's a fun internet thing. It's not going to be on AEW, but they played it, and it's the whole song's out. It's like a full song too. It's like a 2.5 minute song if you go find it online. But this got both the Ass Boys to run off to chase after Danhausen, supposedly. And then we just get Billy and Max versus the Young Lions, or the young, quote-unquote, Young Lions, LA Dojo guys. Everyone's like, it's a handicap match. I'm like, well, Billy Gunn is like 10 feet tall. Like, I don't, even though he is 58, it's really surprising that Billy Gunn is 58 years old. That's the other thing I come away from this match is...
I did not know that, actually.
Billy Gunn is 58.
He's a big guy.
He is the biggest man you've ever... Like, that's the thing. Now that he is not... It's not 1998 anymore. He's not surrounded by Kane and The Undertaker and The Big Show. He's he's around with, like, relatively normal-sized dudes. You're like, oh, wow, Billy Gunn's the biggest man that's ever lived. That's crazy. And there was some tweet I saw. They're like... It was like... Whatever you've heard about or read about steroids, you're wrong. Billy Gunn has all the good steroids. Look at him. He's never gonna die. He's gonna look like that. He's gonna have abs when he's 75 years old. He's still gonna be wrestling. This match was fine. It was fast. It was, again, they got four matches on the pre-show, which is pretty impressive, honestly. They moved pretty quickly.
I thought it was paced really well. Who ended up taking the pin? Was the DKC?
I honestly don't remember, so I'll take your word for it.
I don't totally remember either. I think it was the DKC.
It doesn't hurt any of them. This match effectively is just, hey, you were in Forbidden Door. Isn't that exciting?
Yeah, pretty much. I have to say, it was kind of disappointed not to see Carl Fredericks, just as we're talking about the LA Dojo boys. I know he recently had some beef over not being in the G1.
Yeah, I saw that.
I don't know if that affected his, whether or not he was in Forbidden Door.
I don't, there are a lot of questions about politics involving all of this, and I'm going to...
No, I have no idea.
It's not just him. Like, there is a bunch of other things that were like, why is this person not in the card? Like, the whole thing with Andrade and the Lucha Bros, like, because the AAA, like, they're not on the card. And, like, why did they not bring Naito over? Like, it doesn't, that's weird. And you're like,
you simply can't, like, this was a 5-hour show.
Yeah. Why is Kenta? Why is Kenta not in the card? And you're like, well, maybe because of the Bullet Club stuff. Who knows? I don't know. That's when this is when the official the card starts. The pay per view officially technically starts. It kicks off with the trios match, 6-man tag of Minoru Suzuki, Jericho Appreciation Society. That's just effectively Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara against Eddie Kingston, Shota Umino and Wheeler Yuta, Shooter and Utes. I only call them Shooter and Utes. I never call them Wheeler Yuta or Shota Umino. Like, what? Come on.
I like it.
Utes.
It was really fun.
This match is great.
It was really fun to sing the Fozzy song and then Kaze Nina Ray after that.
Yes. That was very smart on their part. Jericho comes out first, then give Minoru the moment with Kaze Ninare.
Oh, yeah. So that was my second time singing Kaze Ninare. It's very special. I love Minoru Suzuki. And it's just fun seeing him kind of collab with some other heels kind of reunite with, so his whole thing in not his whole thing, but a thing he does in New Japan is he will just fucking wail on the Young Lions. Like, especially if he loses a match, he'll go out to the Young Lions, who are like running the show, and just like beat the shit out of them. Shota is still kind of technically on excursion.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of got one foot into his like own character at this point, but it was fun. It was kind of like nostalgic to see Minoru Suzuki just wail on Shooter. It's cute.
It's a fun match. You could clearly see whenever Eddie got to wrestle with Minoru, he clearly was. It's like Eddie has been like fulfilling life's dreams. It feels like for the past year or two, where he just does mm-hmm. everything that he's ever wanted in wrestling, and like feels like he's gonna go wrestle Uncle June, in Japan at some point, which is mm-hmm. the fifth pillar of all Japan, and he gets to wrestle Minoru. He gets to have a moment where he takes the forearms, and then he delivers the rolling back fist, whatever you call it. I know there's a Japanese name for it. I always forget it.
Yeah, I don't know.
but like this match was a lot of fun. Chaos at times, but everyone fulfilled their role. Shooter is a superstar in the making. Mm-hmm. That is the thing that I come across more than anything. It's like, obviously all these people are very good. They're all very good at the job. Utes is kind of already made because of his match with Mox and joining the BCC. But Shooter this is the first time most people in AEW will have ever seen him. I haven't really seen him much since he was a young lion. I've seen a few that I know he's been doing stuff with Rev Pro and stuff like that, but because of the pandemic, it's all been messed up.
Yeah.
Seeing him wrestle and seeing what everyone called it back then when Mox and him were a team basically during the G1, and watching this match, like all the other people are known quantities. I love Minoru. Jericho and Sami are great as heels. Eddie, I love Eddie, and Utes is a young star in the making. Shooter was kind of how is Shooter going to do in this big match?
Well, it took all three of them to get him down.
Exactly.
And I think that really made the crowd take notice. I'm not surprised that he was kind of the star of the match, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, he ended up getting pinned, but
yeah.
It felt very much like a star making moment. It felt very much like this guy, and he is
keep your eye on him.
Yeah, and whenever he gets back to Japan and gets a full character, he feels like it's only a matter of time before Shooter is a champion.
Yeah, I wonder if he's gonna. I mean, you have to imagine that he'll keep building on the whole Shooter thing. I think so.
I'm like, it's right there. Unless he really hates it for some reason, it's so over, and like the fact that he has the white jacket. Mm-hmm. Against the black Death Rider jacket, like that's really nice contrast. He feels like he's putting his own spin on it, but it's mm-hmm. And Shooter already has really great connotation, especially in New Japan, with he's a shooter, he's a legit tough guy. Mm-hmm. It works perfectly. Why would you not do it?
Yeah. I want the world for him. Good job.
I want the world. Next up is the three-way tag match for the winner-take-all of the Ring of Honor and IWGP Tag Team Championships.
Yes, and this one, now I think we may have had different experiences of this mm-hmm. just by watching it on TV versus in person. So pretty quickly, now I have pregnancy brain, so you got to help me out here. Oh, Dax Harwood.
Dax. Dax is bald. Cash has hair.
Got it. So Dax rolls out of the ring. The medic comes up, is touching his shoulder, and he's escorted away. And he actually, I don't know if you saw this, but he collapses on the way out, which made me really wonder, is this for real or is he working this?
Everyone in the Discord, everyone on Reddit, I was...
Like, no one fucking knows.
At first everyone you go to the worst case, you're like, oh no, the forbidden door struck again, someone else has been, there's been another curse, another injury. And I pretty much had predicted that it literally actually the finish of this match was exactly as I had predicted.
We were all so there were six of us in our section that I went with, myself and five other people. And we were all like, oh my God, what are they going to do? Because we were convinced that FTR was going to win. So we were like, fuck, how are they going to wrap this up? So I'm not like, I've had some very minor, like, medical training back, like, a decade ago. I got, like, a first responder training, and it thankfully has never really been used. Never really needed to use it. But the medic was touching his shoulder, and he was carrying it in a way that I was like, it looks like it popped out. And when that happens, it's really, really painful, but it doesn't necessarily mean there's any long-term damage. Like, it can come out, and your tendons and everything, like your muscles, it can all be fine once it goes back in. It'll just like hurt for a little bit. So the fact that, you know, eventually he comes back, he runs back down, he's been taped up, and he can get back in the ring. I'm like, okay, well, maybe it did just pop out and they got it back in and it's fine. You know,
It's hard to say if this was a work or a shoot. Like, it could clearly, he could have just separated. And he said, he's come out and said since that it was a separated shoulder, but he might still be working us. I don't really know. Someone pointed out, and this does make a lot of sense, that these three-way tags are always a little awkward, you know, because you only have two teams in the ring at once, even despite there's three teams, and you have to, and you're tagging other team members from other. People from other teams are tagging in on people who don't want to be tagged out. Like, it's, you know, it's like a weird dynamic. And someone pointed out, I read that, like, oh, well, if you effectively eliminate a person from the match, or at least for a big stretch of the match, it makes the match simpler to lay out. Mm-hmm. And with the fact FDR are basically baby faces now, and you have like, it is a very old match format where, like, oh, a guy leaves for a while because he's hurt, and then he comes back out bandaged up, and he finishes the match. And
I know. This is what makes me, like, lean towards it being a work. The way that I enjoy wrestling is, like, if I can just let myself be a mark and get worked, then, like, great. Like, my heart was like, oh, no. Oh, this is so, God, is he going to be okay? Like, great. Wrestling is doing its job.
Yes, exactly. If you're suspending your disbelief, then that is working. That's what's supposed to be happening.
Okay, so before I forget to mention it, we took several signs to the show. And one of the signs that we took was a Con on the Cob sign.
Great O'Con. I don't know. It's very hard. Like, this is the thing I come away from after. I have not watched. I'm way behind on my New Japan, mostly because I'm so tired of watching shows without cheering.
Real labor of love sometimes.
It's like, they are still putting on great matches like New Japan always have, but watching people just clap and you're just like, I can't take this.
I know.
This is, like, I do remember Great O'Con when he first came back from his excursion, first had this gimmick, and everyone's like, what is this? What is going on? But he's really coming into his own, and he's a much better worker just since the last time I watched him. He's really good.
He gives 110%, and he seems to be a complete homie out of the ring, too. I mean, like, the whole thing where he, like, prevented a kidnapping or an assault.
Yeah.
In like a train station, and then like gave this girl pancakes, like
posting pictures of him and other and women. And he's in the US, he's just like, oh yeah, it's like, here's me with a woman in a hot tub. I'm like, what is happening?
Did you like read kind of what that was about?
I mean, I know that there's some consent laws in Japan now, and that's what. And he was talking. I think the translations really, like, basically wiped away all nuance. I had no idea what was happening.
Yeah. So my husband Mike, like, kind of looked it up and explained it to me. I guess there were some laws that were really limiting the ability of sex workers to, like, do their job in Japan, and this was a post criticizing those limitations in favor of sex workers, which I'm just like, great. Like, these folks should be able to do what they want to do and get paid for it in a, like, safe and respectful way. And if he's just showing up to, like, like, in support of that, awesome.
I'm full on board with Playboy Oka. Okay. I'm fully on board with him being in Vegas and, you know, hugging giant penises. And pictures of him with multiple women with, like, his shirt open. I'm for it 100%. FDR picks the win up, pinning Rocky, which is 1000% the exact finish I predicted.
So this was really confusing live, because I think it was different when you saw it on TV. The ref starts the count. Rocky arches up, so the ref has to start the count over again. Now, we didn't hear that, so it looked to us like there was a four count and the ref bucked up. It was so confusing when the match ended. We were like, wait a second, what the fuck?
I did not come across on television. Like, it seemed like it was just a normal finish.
Okay, well, at least there's that. But I know there were a lot of people around us who were like, what the fuck just happened?
There was only one match where the finish was where we were all confused, but that's much later on, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah, for sure.
So FTR, now Ring of Honor, New Japan Pro Wrestling, and AAA Tag Team Champions. And I'm saying it right now, they're going to beat the Bucks in FTR Bucks 3, whenever that happens, probably maybe at All Out. I'm not sure, but
I'd like to see it.
It's almost, I mean, yeah, the FTR is on a roll. They're having an incredible year. Just banger after banger, whoever they face, the matches are great. Single, together or alone, against each other even, they've just been putting on amazing matches. So I'm totally for Belt Collector FTR.
Mm-hmm. And I always love hearing their Giorgio Moroder intro song. Big fan.
Very good. It's very good. Ruckus puts... the Forbidden Door entrance, also by Ruckus. Mwah, I love it. It's so good. Power metal. Throwback to like All Japan. Misawa entrance, almost. Next up, the All Atlantic, AW All Atlantic Championship, which I was so bummed when they said Ishii wasn't going to be able to be in the match.
Yeah, but, like, let's fucking go, Clark Connors.
He got an opportunity, beat him big match with three other huge, huge, great, I love everyone else in this match are, like, established superstars. I love them all. Clark had a chance, and he aced it. He did everything he could.
He came in as an absolute nobody. Holy shit. So this was our other sign, as I made a horns up sign with a little picture of a rhino on it, because, like I said, I am a huge LA Dojo fangirl, and Clark Connors is, he's also a, like, Pacific Northwest guy. So just straight to my heart. He comes out, I'm on my feet with the sign up. I think I might be the only person like super hyped for Clark Connors, but over the course of the match, he's got, everybody just like, who the fuck is this guy?
He held his own against, like, you know, obviously you could put, like, that's the other thing about this match is, like, it's for a mid-card title, but Pac, Malakai Black, or Miro are all... You could put them in a championship match and no one would blink an eye.
They're all top card wrestlers. Yes. And Clark Connors won, I think... He was in Best of the Super Juniors. He won one, I think. He was kind of a total flop in that. Not for lack of talent or anything.
If you are... you graduated as a young lion, if you are... You're already a good to very good wrestler. Like, it's nothing new with what's in the ring. It's all about building up a character and establishing yourself and things like that, which is, like, it's not his fault. He wasn't supposed to be in this match. It was going to be Ishii, and God, that would have been a great match too. But this match worked really well. I was predicting a Miro victory after Ishii was out, but I'm totally fine. Again, I don't mind any of these people winning. Pac winning is great. Pac hasn't had a championship since he's joined AEW, and giving him the belt, not a problem. He can, and people are speculating this is a title he can take. He lives in the UK and he sometimes travels hard, so he can take it to other places and wrestle. And this is like, I don't know if that's actually what this card's, if this mat, that this title is going to be that, like the traveling title. It might be. I don't know. That's why I had speculated that originally Ishii was going to win it, because this is a title that he could take back to Japan and defend it in New Japan or anywhere. And maybe eventually he drops it to somebody and they themselves travel around with it. Who knows?
Yeah.
This is a very good match. A lot of fun. I love all these guys. Everyone got their spots in. No one looked weak. Everyone looked like a killer. It was very good.
And just the best part of the match where I think it was Miro sets up the table and looks like he's going to put, God, I can't even remember which one he was going to put through. But basically, these Pac, Miro, and Malakai Black all kind of assemble in front of this table. And Clark Connors, who we've all forgotten about at this point because he got thrown out of the ring, like works his way around the corner of the skirt and then just like a wild rhino rams these guys into the table. And it was just like a huge pop. And I think Clark Connors has gotten a lot of attention like on social and stuff after this, that people were like, oh, we should look out for this guy too.
Yeah.
So.
And he did a great job. And again, different, I'm to point this out, a four-way match, and like there's another four-way match later in the show. The dynamics of this one feel very different from what that one turns out to be, which I do like that too. The next match, another six-man tag. This is Dudes with Attitudes versus Bullet Club.
What they're really called, Dudes with Attitudes?
Oh yeah, I mean Sting's in it, and I like it. It felt more appropriate with Hiromu there because Hiromu can make that dumb shit work better than anyone. And that's the other poor Hiromu didn't make it to the U.S. because of a fever. Oh, I wanted so badly to see him and Darby in the ring together, and him and Sting in the ring together. Like even seeing Stingo. working together.
That's funny.
Darby, Sting, Shingo versus EOP, Matt, and Nick.
When they were setting this up on TV, did they do the thing where they made you think Sting was in the rafters? Or was that just
yes.
for us?
No, we saw that. The camera showed a distant figure of Sting in the rafters, and you're like, what's going on? And then suddenly they cut back to the... And like they did a really good job of showing, like, because you see the silhouette in the background behind the Bullet Club guys, and then Sting jumps off the top of their entrance. It worked really well.
I 100% fell for that. Like, I saw them bringing the ladder out, and then they shine the spotlight up there, and I was like, oh my God, what's that old man going to do? Completely forgot about the ladder. But like I said, I was in a place where I was ready to just completely mark out. Again, a fun match. El Phantasmo up to his usual like titty twister shenanigans. It's always satisfying to see that like backfire on him. Don't try to titty twist Sting, I guess.
That's the Sting ages in reverse. That's what at this point he is, you know, 63, and he is with the makeup and the way that they use him in tags, they hide, like, he's not the same. I know that. But they hide it so well, you're just like, oh, it's Sting. He's always, like, Sting was my first favorite wrestler. Surfer really? Sting, when I was a little tiny boy, Surfer Sting was my favorite wrestler.
Aww.
And
he's still going.
and now I'm in my almost late 30s, and Sting's still there. And it's still Sting. It's still like, oh, that's still Sting. He's still doing... Scorpion death drops and death locks. And like, you're just like, it's Sting and
Sting.
It's still Sting, you know, and him and Darby have been a great team, and seeing Shingo in there, you're like, I mean, I love Shingo. Shingo's great. It's just like, and then suddenly you're like, oh, who cares? This is so much fun. Shingo and Sting on a team together, doing the Los fist together thing. And we get, and like I think watching this, the other thing that kind of cemented in my mind, because Matt and Nick, when they were firmly in Bullet Club in New Japan, they were trolly in the ring, and it just seems like El Phantasmo is that just to the nth degree. He just has took that same shtick and dialed it up even further, and it's fun. It's fun to have them on a team together because it brought back that stuff from Matt and Nick, because they've kind of drifted away from more of it as they've gotten older. But seeing them troll as hard as ALP does, very fun.
It was fun. Fun is the right word for them.
Yeah.
For sure.
And again, it's not, you know, it's not like some technical masterpiece, but it doesn't need to be. Like, and I think that's the other thing is like it. it shows AEW fans in New Japan is also can be fun, and you can, it's not just work rate matches, which obviously New Japan has in spades, but there's just fun. Also, and I might as well bring this up now. There's no other spot to talk about, but Yano was in the crowd, and he just watched the show. That's all he just came over to watch.
So I'm assuming the camera showed him in the crowd.
No. People took pictures. Like he posted on Instagram that he was in Chicago, and people were like speculating, like, what's he gonna do? Like, he doesn't have to have a big do anything big, but just have him show up and do something fun.
He can't help but be a trickster and interfere.
Trickster. But all he did, he just stayed in the crowd the entire time, just watched the show. And as soon as Moxley won, he left. He apparently just walked out as soon as Moxley beat Tana. Maybe when we get the Forbidden Door 2 in Japan, we'll get some Yano on the card. I hope so.
Man, that I was thinking that if I could add like somebody that wasn't on the card, that it would have been really fun to get Yano or Taguchi. Just another like Japanese goof for just the same reason of, you know, showing people that it isn't just like wrestling presented like a sports game or sports show.
Yeah. Next up is the AEW Women's World Championship, which was a very good match. Tony,
the shortest on the card.
No. Well. Yeah, on the main card, yes, it's the shortest.
Yeah.
These two matches, the dudes, the six man tag with Sting and everyone was the second shortest, and then this was a 10 minute match. Mm-hmm. 10 minutes and 40 seconds, says Wikipedia. It's a good match. Mm-hmm. Thunder Rosa's championship reign has been middling at times, which it's hard to tell if that's how much of it is her dealing with an injury versus the booking versus whatever. But her matches have all been good. And Toni Storm is, I will say, the best women's worker in AEW.
Yeah.
I think it might be Serena. It depends who you ask. I think I prefer Tony's style. She's more of a powerhouse style versus the technical style that Serena uses.
She had a hip check in that match that just
it looks rough. every time. It's like legitimately people, you know, joke because obviously she's beautiful. They're like, oh, I wish I could. I'm like, not a one. Yeah. No, do not do that to me, Toni Storm. You'll break my fucking neck. That looks violent, and I really like it for that reason. It's a good match. I think this is like that double-edged sword where you're like, I'm glad they got a women's match on the card.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish there was Stardom involvement, but apparently Tony tried and everyone was booked and they couldn't make it over. He's not opposed to it, if you got Stardom people involved, like the work rate goes up like 10,000% already because their wrestlers are so good. But,
I feel like this was the biggest weakness of the show was that there weren't more women's matches. And I realize that it's complicated because New Japan is all men and that they have this relationship with Stardom, but it's a different company. And I mean, couldn't they have done another just AEW women's match? Like even on the pre-show, like,
I don't know. We could talk for a long time about how AEW books their women in specifically without New Japan's involvement. Once you start getting that New Japan involvement in a card, it's when I go, at least there's one of them, you know, like there's New Japan does in the way, like, and even Stardom is owned by the same company, but Rossi, the booker for Stardom, is very prickly about doing all that. Like, I have no idea again, that's another thing where I don't know what the politics were. This feels like Tony going, this is my card. Technically, we're in America. I'm going to put the women's world title on the match, on the card at least.
All right. Fantasy booking for Forbidden Door 2. Can we get Toni Storm versus Taguchi?
Someone was joking about this. I want Toni in her Minoru Suzuki cosplay. That's what. Oh. That's if we're doing intergender with Taguchi, then it we open the doors to all the comedy in the world. So yeah, she should come out dressed as Minoru like she did she has done in the past, in Japan. We do not have much time left.
Yes, I can push a little bit past.
Okay, well, it's a good match. I'll say that. Thunder Rosa and Tony Storm, I like them both, and they put on a good match. Next up, Ospreay versus Orange Cassidy. This is my favorite match on the card.
Okay.
I knew that they would have a good match, obviously. They're both really good. Ospreay, maybe top 10 talent in the world. Orange Cassidy, not a slouch, can go with anyone. Also, his selling is very underrated, I think. But this exceeded my expectations. It was a really, really good match and had me buying multiple false finishes.
Yeah, I have to admit, this is where I took a bathroom break. And I just had to go at some point. So
it's a true New Japan card when you're like, oh, I need to go to the bathroom. When though? every match is good. What do I do?
I know. And my poor pregnant bladder just was like, you gotta do it.
When you gotta go, you gotta go.
So, Will Ospreay is so detestable. Like, he's an incredible wrestler. Really, 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 really talented. But what a shithead. I think that it was really fun. Like, I didn't see this, but I heard that he put his hands in Orange Cassidy's pockets.
Yes.
I think it's, like, just kind of perfect for his character.
And pulled out a middle finger. Pulled out a bird.
Oh, God.
Very, while facing the camera, when he pinned Orange, he did the half-hearted thumbs up.
Oh, what a shithead.
What a shithead. And that's, I've come around on Will Ospreay's character. His work rate and as a wrestler, he's always been great, forever. Despite the fact he repeatedly endangers his own head, but, he's always been like, dude, you're just doing Kenny Omega again, man. Like, you can't just be Kenny. Like, do something else. And I think his terrible haircut, his haircut is so bad. It's perfect. It is a very bad haircut, but that is perfect for that shithead.
The Billy Goat barf.
Him and Aussie Open have like three just awful haircuts between three guys, like the team with the worst haircuts. They just are unmatched, just three terrible haircuts on all of them. This is a great match. I'm glad, like, I don't know, I think Trent tweeted this afterward. He's like, if you still think Orange Cassidy is a bad wrestler, you're an asshole. Like, Orange Cassidy, yeah, he's does comedy, but he's also just great. He held his own with Will Ospreay,
and that's really saying something.
Yeah, it was a good match. And after the match is over, of all people,
oh, I fucking called this like 2 weeks ago. I was like, who would be the craziest person to show up at Forbidden Door, and who was it?
Shibata. Shibata shows up, and like, it makes sense to a certain degree. Like, oh, he would be on. He'll show up. Like, he's part of the New Japan's American presence in the LA Dojo. But having him come out to face off with Ospreay and to save Orange Cassidy, and then we get the spot with Orange putting the glasses on him and the thumbs up.
Oh my God.
Oh, it's so good. It's just, I almost exploded, like, with just your joy. And just like, oh, this is so pro wrestling. This is pro wrestling.
I was out of my seat with the first, like, chord that plays in his music because it's so recognizable. Like, holy shit. There's Shibata.
And is Shibata going to wrestle again?
They're fucking teasing it, dude. I mean,
like real matches, not like a safe exhibition match. Like, is his brain, can he do, like, I don't want him to, don't die, Shibata.
I know. There's part of me that's like, he kind of wants to die in the ring.
I mean, he is that crazy. He absolutely would be, like, he's the nutcase. He's a lunatic. I mean, literally, he's in incredible shape. I can't, like, it's just ridiculous. There's a picture of him in Tana on some Instagram, and he looks like just incredible shape.
Well, I mean, he's working out. So.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, I think I would not be surprised if they started pushing him in that direction to actually do like for real matches.
I mean, if he's going to wrestle, like if he does wrestle Ospreay, that would be don't do that. Do some like, I mean, I guess they've done the safe quote unquote match multiple times now, you know, with the Saber. And Ren Narita. So like
his clone basically.
Yeah, exactly. Little Shibata. We'll see. Yeah. Next up, we get the mystery opponent against Zack Sabre Jr.
With like heavy quotes because we all knew who it was.
Yeah, they're really after like when you're like, well, who could it be? You know, right? Like what are the people that you could make this a mystery opponent to replace Bryan Danielson? Who else is going to be at that same category?
I know there was rumbles about Johnny Gargano showing up, and then like either the day before or earlier that day, he tweeted a picture of himself like on a plane. I think I didn't see.
He was coincidentally in Chicago for a separate event, and people were like, but then he tweeted like, I swear it's not me. I'm just in Chicago. Do not think it's me. And I'm like, okay. And it doesn't make any sense. Like Claudio has so much history with all of those guys. Like he was Regal's last match. He trained with Moxley and with Bryan Danielson. They all have a bunch of history together. Obviously, it's Claudio.
Yeah. That was probably the biggest cheer of the night is when the Swiss flag came up on the screen.
I mean, I'm super happy that the match was very good. You put those two guys together, of course, the match is very good. It really... God,
and I almost had a heart attack, like, right at the beginning. Claudio kind of like jumps the fucking bell and gets Zack Sabre Jr. in like a roll up pin really quick, and I was like, "Fuck no! Like don't let this be it! Like let them wrestle."
I mean, I like that. Like again, this match completely different from all the other matches on the card. Mm-hmm. This match is also the other. Like this is, I want to full credit to Zack Sabre Jr. because this is not the match he would wrestle with Bryan Danielson.
No.
If he's wrestling Bryan Danielson, it's a completely different match than with Claudio, who is also a gigantic man who is one of the strongest people on earth, apparently, for his size. It seems like that spot where he does the gotch lift on Zack Sabre Jr. out of the arm bar, they fall out of the ring, and he holds it the entire time and walks him back into the ring to powerbomb him. You're like,
oh my God. Like over the turnbuckle or over the top rope.
Yes.
That was wild. Giant muscles, giant heart. You could feel the whole time that he was just like so happy to be there and so excited.
It was a very good match, and have you seen Zach's? And we also it's a little bonus kiss. We get the pissy Zack Sabre Jr. post match losing promo.
I did not see.
Oh,
this.
You need to watch it. It is so delightful. It is just Zack Sabre like you Swiss bastard. That was not technical wrestling. I wanted Bryan Danielson. I wanted technical wrestling, and it was beautiful. It's just.
Well, I'm really excited to have Claudio in AEW now.
Yes, I mean it's again like now there's just a world of dream matches. Like he can wrestle just solo matches with so many guys, and they will. It'll all be great. I can't. Welcome, Claudio. Next up, the four-way for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. And very good match, but the finish was a little deflating. It's not anyone's fault, and honestly, it was the smart thing to do on Jay's part, but. It's clearly like, oh man, the forbidden door struck.
Yeah.
The curse.
So I actually like missed the finish. I don't even know what I was doing. I was like looking somewhere else, and Mike had to explain it to me what happened. Cause I was like, wait a second, that was really fast. But I guess Adam Cole was concussed.
Okada gave him avalanche tombstone. And I think, I think that's what it, that's the Cole has a concussion, so that's what people are assuming is that move. He got a concussion, and the theory was that right after that, Okada got him up for the Rainmaker, and the theory was Cole's going to eat a Rainmaker, and then they would have segued into switch with Jay giving Okada the switchblade, and then he would pin Cole just like he did anyway. But because Cole was concussed, he was confused and ducked the Rainmaker and fell down, and Jay was just like, let's just wrap it up. He's concussed. There's what else are we gonna do?
Yeah. It was really confusing, and I imagine that it was probably really hard to communicate because I don't think Okada knows like any English.
I think he knows the basics, and that's about it. He understood, like, I met him like a handful of years ago at All In Weekend. You know, he could say, you know, he could do basic like hello, how's it going, things like that. And thank yous and things like that. But he doesn't, I'm sure, enough to communicate with English-speaking wrestlers. But what are you going to do in that situation? And the finish, when the finish is already Jay pinning Cole, and Cole has a concussion, well, Jay could theoretically pin someone else, but they don't want him pinning Okada or Hangman because both those guys were just champions, and they don't want to, you know, and they want to further, I think they want to further the Jay and Cole rivalry. So... Yeah. That's what they went to that. And you're like, in retrospect, it makes perfect sense. It's just a little bit at the end, you're like, wait a minute, what happened?
Yeah, totally.
It was a good match, and everyone got spots in, and obviously everyone is super, super hyped for all of those guys all being in the ring together. I love Okada now just using the, wearing my brain. The Inoki robe. Okada's just fully on wearing the Inoki robe as his entrance. I like that. Just do it.
Yeah. And I really liked Hangman's gear for this. The was it like cow print with glitter and fringe? It was very like rhinestone cowboy.
I'm
big fan. And was also very excited to see Gato show up.
Yeah, we had explained Gato to people. We're like, they're like, who's Gato? And we're like, oh, he's the booker for New Japan. They're like, he's on TV? I'm like, he's not the booker on TV. He's a manager on TV. Then like he used to manage Okada, then he betrayed him, and now he's with Jay. Like, yeah. So, but it's nice to see Gato again.
Bucket hat and everything.
Yeah.
I love
it. Yeah, you're not gonna, Hangman's my boy. There's no one I love more than a Hangman, so you're not gonna, my anxious millennial cowboy, 1,000%. The only thing I mean, and this is my fault, because I had hopes for it. Not that they teased it even a little bit, but I was like, are we gonna get Kenny? Are we gonna get just an appearance? Not, I don't expect him to wrestle, but just to show up.
I was waiting for that too. I really, really wanted him to just come out.
He has history with all those guys, like all four of those guys. He has history with, and I'm like, just to have him show up and say, you know.
He also has that beef with New Japan.
I think that's water under the bridge at this point. Yeah, I don't. Right. I think all that was with Harold, and now that Obari is in charge, and that's what everyone has said. Basically, I think from what I could piece together from interviews, and obviously New Japan is not nearly as forthcoming about this stuff as, you know, AEW wrestlers are, but it feels very much like this. Obari is much, much, you know, cooler and kinder with, you know, other promotions, and obviously with people coming back and forth. And apparently most people did not like Harold May behind the scenes. And now that he's gone, they won't have to worry about that. And I think if Kenny was healthy, he would absolutely be, even if it's just to give, like, I don't think Kenny cares at this point. I mean, at this point, I think New Japan would happily have Kenny, you know, because Kenny has technically, you know, give Okada the last win. If they're going to have another match, give Okada for Kenny Okada 5, give Okada the victory so that he would have the record over him. But I don't think New Japan would care about that. I don't think Kenny would care about losing to Okada again. But I don't think, I think he's just not healthy enough.
Yeah, he must not even be close, you know.
And after, like, when one of my friends who's a very casual fan of wrestling was talking about, you know, Claudio being in AEW now, and I'm like, he texted me, I'm like, and he's like, where's Kenny? I'm like, he's healing from basically 4 years of injuries or more. Yeah. Like, there's, you just, I listened to the podcast with the Observer with Kenny, and whoo boy, he, laundry list of injuries, just the things, and like, he just was casually putting on like 6-7 star matches with just ridiculous things, and you're just like, oh my god, Kenny, take all the time.
Yeah, right. Thank you for everything you do to your body.
Yes, exactly. The last match, John Moxley,
yes,
against Hiroshi Tanahashi for the AEW interim, yes, AEW World Championship.
Now, this is another one that I think we probably have very different experiences of, because there was a big fight in the crowd.
That's what, like, there was, yes, a moment where like, what is everyone looking at? What is going on?
Yeah.
And Moxley, I think, also realized that and just went into a rest hold with Tana and just,
yeah,
sat out and waited.
Yeah, so all that I saw was just, like, two guys totally going at it, and then one of them got cuffed and taken out. Like, you know, who knows what it was about? Does not matter. But I think that they did a really good job of kind of, like, stalling while that played its... played out, and I think they did a really good job of getting the momentum back up when attention shifted back to them. It's just unfortunate that that happened.
Yeah, I mean, again, forbidden door, curse, the curse continues. Very good match. Like, again, like, you're just like, obviously Mox and Tana are both great wrestlers and have, you know, and even Tana at 45, like, there's a couple people who are watching on the Discord, and they were like, they haven't had the exposure to Tana, younger Tanahashi, when he was not, when he had knees, effectively, when he had functioning knees, you know, and you're like, you don't understand, like, and, but this match, he has to be getting shots in his knees before these big matches. There's no other way I believe it.
Of course.
But it turns back time, and it's just, you watch these matches and you forget that Tana is 45 years old and he's kind of broken down at this point. You're just like, it's still ace. He's still the ace. He still can do it. Yeah. And it was a great match.
I think Moxley may have bladed a little too deep.
I would agree that was he didn't need to bleed that much, but I don't know if you asked Moxley if he would say that. Moxley would be like, no, I wanted to bleed a lot, so I did. It feels like that's what it was. Like, he might have just went, that's what I wanted. I wanted to bleed. And you're like, okay. There was no other blood in the match, really.
Yeah. For someone who, like, loves to paint blood, I was getting to the point where I was like, I can't. I have to kind of look away a little bit.
It wasn't like, I don't know, after that match with Yuta, the Yuta, how much Yutes bled, like, I need, like, it'll take a lot to be shocked at this point. This was a good match. The fallout here with, you know, after Mox wins, gets the interim title. I don't know if this counts as a real title reign yet until he beats Punk. If he beats Tunk, I don't think he's going to, but who knows. But we get we get Claudio cleaning house as Jericho and everyone comes running down, and then we get Eddie continuing his rivalry with Claudio, even though it's been years since all that happened in Chikara or whatever. There's good clips of that where you can see them, where he's yelling at Moxley. He's like, what the fuck, John? Why'd you bring in this guy? What the fuck? It was very good.
Yeah. It was a fun little encore, having everybody come back out and seeing a couple faces that didn't make it into the show.
Yeah, it was good. It was like, I think this is to put a capper on the show as a whole. Like I said before, we basically started was this kind of a mediocre build, and, you know, you're flying people back and forth from Japan, and some people are getting hurt literally as the show is getting set up. Like, there's so many Punk and Danielson and Ishii and Hiromu, and like there's all these people. You're like, oh man, I wish they were on the card, and they got hurt, and you're like, ah. And then you watch the show and you're like, man, that was good. What a show. And thing, like, I thought, like, I mentioned All In earlier, back before AEW existed. And, like, when I was first watching New Japan in 2017, 2018, you've told me that there, back then, oh, there's going to be a big second American company. And they're going to be on TV. They're going to be very popular. And they're going to put on shows with New Japan, big super shows. I'd be like, you're crazy. You're nuts. That's not going to happen. Like, it just feels like it would never, it felt impossible. And now we're here, 2022, and we're having matches where we have Tanahashi and Moxley for world titles, you know, under a banner of two different companies. It's really kind of an incredible
thing. It's a dream come true. I mean, this is why we spent an irresponsible amount of money to come to Vegas.
I've been, you know, all the big AEW pay-per-views that I've flown into Chicago for. Yes, they were very expensive, had absurd amounts of money. I did not regret them even a moment. Like, it's just such an incredible experience.
We had a fucking blast. It was amazing. And my hope for this is that they do every other year in Japan and the U.S. and they try to keep it, like, balanced like that.
I think they will. I think Obari has already said, like, he wants to do a show like this in Japan. And it makes perfect sense. And Zack Sabre Jr. even teased that in his little promo after the match, where he's like, I'm not coming back to the U.S. You can come to UK or Japan. And you're like, well, Danielson and Sabre in Japan. Do that.
Yeah. Let's go.
And I think that will drive, absolutely. A lot of these guys, Danielson in particular, he wants to wrestle in New Japan. And I think he realizes the clock is ticking on his body. He's like, I need to do it. And they need to do it before my head decides I can't wrestle anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's too bad that he got hurt, because, it would have been fun to see him in, like, the G1.
Yes. That's the other thing. It's just like, it'd be awesome to see him in the G1, but God, it's so brutal. It's so rigorous, and you have to wrestle so many matches in such a short amount of time. I mean, he's in great shape, but one concussion, that's all it takes.
Yeah, right.
It's a good show. Great show. Anything else you want to talk about? Anything else you want to mention?
I'm just really excited at the prospect that cheering is going to start again in New Japan. They keep teasing that. And I hope that there are lots of AEW fans that decide to start watching Japanese wrestling because of this.
I have committed, like, I'm already like, as soon as they can cheer again, I'm gonna watch New Japan.
Soon.
Again.
They keep mentioning it. Like, Kevin Kelly keeps saying, like, soon.
Soon, literally, the moment it starts, I'm like, well, I'll start watching again then. That's all it takes. Yeah. I just need, I cannot deal with them clapping politely for heels anymore. I can't take it anymore. Also, I will say this. No House of Torture on this card. So great. I hate it. I hate House of Torture. I hate them. Not in a good way. Not, you know, in a get away from, go, stop. Stop it.
I don't know. I'm kind of endeared to, like, Glitch show. And I think I have thoughts about this. Like, if you're trying to put House of Torture on the top of a card, like, I don't know. But if they're kind of, like, mid-card shitheads, I think that's kind of where they belong. But it was nice to see some, like, different matchups, and not just, like, the same crew.
Yes. And I think that's the other thing that, obviously, it's not New Japan's fault, but over the pandemic, it's just they've had the same people and they've just been wrestling each other over and over and over and over again. Having this huge variety that AEW has, this, which is, like, that's the one of the reasons why New Japan would partner with AEW. It's like they have this very large roster. Lots of fresh matchups.
Mm-hmm. Well, good times. Yeah, looking forward to what's next.
Anything you want to plug before we go, Helen?
Well, to all of the listeners in Portland, I'm in a group show at the Fourth Wall on Hawthorne for the month of July. Other than that, you can check me out at Helen Hunter Art on Instagram. And yeah.
I'll post a link to the Instagram, to Helen's Instagram, on the show notes. You can click there. I'll do it. Helen, thank you for joining me.
And thanks for having me, as always. Until next time.
You can find me on Twitter at Robbie Dorman, and my website is robbiedorman.com. You'll find links there for all my other podcasts and for all of my novels. My newest novel is called Killer Hockey Mascot. Guess what it's about? It's available for pre-order, and there's a link on the show notes to get yourself a copy. Really appreciate it if you did. Until next time, thanks for being a fan.